Blog Talk Radio.
Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Happy, happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers, grandmothers, godmothers, surrogate mothers, house mothers, however you've been a mother. Happy Mother's Day to you, even if you have never been the biological birthing mother of anyone. Sometimes there are those among us who have been mothers to those whose biological mothers were not able, for whatever reason, to be the mother that the child needed at any given time. There's so many complex, complicated aspects of being a mother, discovering what it is now, and I'm a grandmother with adult grandchildren and still learning never ends. So how many of you really understood and appreciated your mother as you were growing up? You know, I can't see your hand, but you can see, and you can feel your heart. How many of you? And I say this based upon my own personal experience. You know that often when we have moments of disappointment, they're always based upon some expectation that we have, that we perceive have not been met, and often we have not perceived that it probably may have not been for our highest good at that moment. And so we experience disappointment. And since generally the dominant one with the children was often the mother, not always the case, but many times it was such. And so the disappointments were with the ones that we perceived had the authority, and they did have authority over us. Some of my friends and even some of my relatives have said to me that they've gone back in their adult years after they've had children and apologized to their mothers, because as the light began to dawn on them, they now began to understand better the mother that they did not, had not understood as a child. You know, in Corinthians it says, when I was a child, I thought as a child. I acted like a child. But when I became an adult, I put away childish things. Well, you know that you could not still wear the size shoe in most cases that you wore when you were 6, 7, and 8 years old. And so there's no challenge in putting away those garments you could no longer wear because they didn't fit, would cramp your style. You couldn't even get in them. But the thinking that we had at 2, 3, and 4 and even younger, and all the way up through adolescence, much of it follows us into our 20s, 30s, 40s, and I won't even say, but yes, I will, 50s and beyond. So I would encourage you, as you look back over your life, at those times that maybe your mom is not even any longer on the planet, but the soul is infinite and eternal. And so I'm wishing all those mothers who may have exited the planet with a restless soul, knowing that their children were capable of so much, much more than what they were demonstrating at any given moment. And, of course, they were hoping to see it
in this lifetime. You know, it was Edgar Casey that said, Edgar Casey, of course, was considered to be the foremost psychic of the 20th century. He was also called the sleeping prophet. And he said that our mothers, or our parents, actually, are the experts in the lessons that we learn in this lifetime. What is the lesson that you came to learn? And by the way, I'm Joanne Buckner, founder of Beauty Shop for the Soul. A Beauty Shop for the Soul, for anyone who may not have tuned in before, is a program of personal and personal development, I'll just say. It's a transformational process, not unlike when you go to a traditional beauty shop to get your head done, meaning your hair, of course. You know, periodically, and pretty much for those who go regularly, could be once, twice, three times a month. But how often do you examine your head, the way you think, the way you see yourself in the world, the way you see your world, the way you saw your mother? And so I'm wishing you again Happy Mother's Day. And in fact, I'm encouraging you that every day is Mother's Day, just like every day is Christmas and every day is a birthday. So what if mothers waited one day a year and prepared your meals and prepared your clothing and took care of all your special needs just one day? No, how about every day? So did you know how unique and special you are? You are an individualized and beautiful expression of an infinite intelligence, much like a snowflake. No two snowflakes are alike, and no two individuals are alike. So why then do we get thrown off course with the expectation that anyone else should think and act like we do? They don't. And they won't. So we are here to discover the purpose for which we were created, because in the same way that each of us is a unique, individualized expression, so too is your purpose. And so we are here to discover what that is. And if we're so busy tending to others' purpose, we will never discover our own. I want to talk to you about the one that I could talk about best would be my own, and myself as a mother, in fact. You know, when we're going through the process, we all do the best we can, and it's only in hindsight that we get to see some of the places where we missed the mark. And what is it to miss the mark? In the scriptures, it refers to missing the mark of the high calling, which would be a sin. And sin, in its original definition, was simply a term from archery, where the archer, the mark, he sinned. So, you know, it's not about doing egregious kind of things like drugs and sexual kind of things, molestation. All of those things certainly fit into a category. But whenever we are seeing ourselves, our mothers, or anything, anyone, less than the way that they were created to be, we are missing the mark. We've sinned. So you are made in the image and likeness of love, from love to love and be loved. And if what you're doing is not loving, you're missing the mark. And calling it judgment and criticism and condemnation and guilt and all of those other many things that we are so notorious about boxing in people and ideas and events. I think about a woman. When I was growing up, I'm the fifth child of nine. I'm exactly in the middle. And during the days when I was a toddler, times were very, very different. Those were the days when mothers really had to work hard. I mean, many mothers, mine among them, had a washboard. Imagine scrubbing blue jeans, sheets, blankets, towels, everything on a washboard. First, you had to heat the water. Then you had to make the starch. It was so much to each task that it literally took the entire day. No wonder mothers were so exhausted. And my mother had asked 9 of us. But I got a reprieve from that because we had neighbors who were twins. And somehow I decided, as a 2-year-old, I don't know when it started, but I heard the story all of my life. I would go across the, it was an alley, really, across from where we lived. And these neighbors, Amy and Mamie, who were my parents' peers, maybe even, and not maybe, they were older. But I would go to their house every day. So they tell me, or they told me, all of my growing up years. And when they would hear a knock on the door and they couldn't see ahead, they knew who it was. It was Joanne, little Joe. And so they would open the door, and I would go in, but I wouldn't speak. They would speak to me, and the sister, the twin called Mamie, most referred to her as Little Sis. And so, of course, we came to call her Miss Little Sis. Take me into another room where there was a rocking chair. And she would sit in this rocking chair with me in her lap and rock me until I fell asleep. The interesting thing is that they thought that I couldn't talk. And despite the fact that both my mother and my father had told them that I could, they just thought that my parents were being typical parents, that I could not talk. Now, there was a gentleman who used to come to visit at this household. His name was Mr. Bob. And back in those days, people used to pinch the jaws. And it was kind of painful of little children. Somehow they thought that fun. I never thought so, but it happened to me often. Mr. Bob would come in. I would be sitting in Miss Little Sister's lap, and he would walk up, bend over, and squeeze my jaws and pinch both jaws. So during the midst of this time when they thought that I could not talk, on one occasion, I saw Mr. Bob coming, and I jumped up out of Miss Little Sister's lap. Speaking as I jumped up, "Here comes Mr. Bob, here comes Mr. Bob, here comes Mr. Bob," they said, I said, "I better run and hide. He's going to pinch my jaws." These are the first words that they had ever heard me speak, and I had been coming to their house for months and months without saying a word, just getting the nurturing of a mother that my own mother had not either had or taken time, because it was a chore. And in fact, we grew up in Indiana. And in Indiana, in the cold months, you couldn't go without doing laundry. So every Monday was a wash day, and my mother had to carry water from the outside. It was in the yard, not that many yards away, but it's still water heavy, and it had to be heated a bucket at a time. Doing laundry itself was an all-day thing, and in the winter, the laundry was hung outdoors. And I can remember, as I got to be 9, 10, and 11, I used to have to help hold the clothing, and it would be stiff as a board, blue jeans and shirts. They would be frozen in the form in which they had been cut. That's the kind of lifestyle that my mother went through. God bless her soul. And so I found consolation in the lap of a neighbor who, as I grew older, found other ways to offset the, you could say, economic status of our household. There was never a lot of money for anything. And, of course, little children love to get candy and things. And so the twin sisters would create chores for me. They didn't need any assistance, but they made me think that they did. And so they would have me dust off the tabletop or do various other little things, and then they would give me spending money. I could then go to the movie. I could go around the corner to the corner store and buy a dill pickle. I remember buying a dill pickle and a peppermint stick and sticking the peppermint stick down inside of it. Well, I have looked back over my life many times, and I only wish that my mother were around now, that I could share with her the insights that I've gotten from the relationship that I had with her as I was growing up. And so I was many years later, years after my mother had made her transition, I was on the freeway, and there was something that came to me. It was a poem, actually, but I had never heard it before, so it was just given to me. And I was on the freeway, and in fact, I was actually in the fast lane. So I just started to repeat it to myself over and over until I could get off the freeway. And as soon as I got off, I took out a piece of paper. I always had a bag with books and papers, et cetera. And I wrote the poem down. And then I called it Me and Mama. And I understood in that self-same instant how I had not understood. Now I understood how I had not understood. And the poem said, excuse me, sometimes I wish Mama had understood me better. Sometimes I wish that I had better understood Mama. Then I wish that Mama had better understood Mama and I had better understood me. But if we had better understood we, I wonder who I'd be. Me, and I like me, just as I like Mama. Mama and me, we were we. Thanks, Mama. By the way, I'm going to come back to this in just a minute, but I want to say I'm still having technical difficulties, so you won't be able to push number one and share a thought or ask a question, make a comment. And I did take my computer in, and it seemed to be working okay in the shop, but I brought it back home, and it was still doing the same malfunctioning as it did before I left. And so by that time, I had no opportunity to get it back to the shop, but someone is actually going to come. I trust that next week when we talk, you'll be able to push number one and call your friends, have them dial the same number you did, 646-200-4169, and let's talk about ourselves as mothers. How has the way that we perceived our mothers to be affected the way that we became as mothers? And as we look back over our lives and as we go through it, how does that affect our becoming grandmothers or godmothers, for that matter, or just mothers of those that are around us? I lived in Africa for 2 years, and I visited villages from time to time. And in these villages, some of the children did not even know their biological mother, though she was there in the same village. And that's because in their custom, in their tradition, all of the women that were in that particular village treated all of the children as though they were their own. And so the children often did not know who the mothers were. But to get back to the poem, Me and Mama, think back over your life. Can you go back as far as 3 years old, maybe 2, 5, you know, the preschool years? And think about the time when you were disappointed. Was it not a time when you did not get to do the thing you wanted to do and the way you wanted to do it, when you wanted to do it? And since Daddy was at work and Mommy was the one that was there with you, then your frustration or disappointment was with Mommy. And so you had a sense of not only disappointment, but maybe even anger. I see it in the supermarkets all the time now, the little children having tantrums with their mothers. And, of course, in most cases, the mothers act almost as though the child is not doing it, but that's another story, and that's not what this program is about. But I really wanted
to address here is, as we mature, we begin, and then as we grow, begin to grow and evolve, sometimes we do things, and as we look back at something that we just recently did, and the thought pops up, why did I do that? I've even heard some describe themselves or the behavior as stupid. I'm happy to say I didn't use that language, but I have recognized that I have on more occasions than I'd like to remember or acknowledge, there have been times when I wonder, why did I do that, whatever that was. And so in the sense of maturing, if we are able to stand in integrity with ourselves and our own behavior and recognize and acknowledge that we have done things and we have not a clue why we did what we did, well, what about Mama? Do you think that perhaps sometimes Mama may have done something and looked back just as we did and wondered why she had done what she had done? So maybe Mama didn't always understand Mama, just as you have not always understood you, nor I, me, for that matter. And so then, back to the point where it says, then I wish that Mama had better understood Mama and I had better understood you. That's an indication of guilt. But if we, me and Mama, if we had understood we, wonder who would I be? If we had understood we, not me, it wouldn't be me. And you know what? I come to like me. I didn't always like me. There was a time I didn't even like my name until I discovered the meaning of the name. God gracious, become my challenge to live up to that, being a gift from God. Now, that doesn't mean that I, thinking, believing that I'm greater than, better than anyone else, because God doesn't, is no respecter of persons. And when God made each and every one of us, there's nothing missing, nothing broken, nothing left out. We came here for a specific purpose, and in the same way that when those of you who have gone to a college or a university, you selected the one according to the thing that you thought you wanted to matriculate in. If you wanted to be an architect, you selected a school where they had a major, you could major in architectural design. If you wanted to be a minister, of course, you would go to a school where they taught theology, to a seminary. Every specific profession has a curriculum that is designed specifically for the major that you wish to achieve or obtain while you're in the university. Well, this is the University of Life. And so the president, the dean, and all the officials, they're all rolled in one or in two, Mama and Daddy, the experts in the lessons that we came to learn in this lifetime. Have you discovered yet the lesson that you've come to learn? Do you ever even ask? And then what do? After you ask, do you believe it, or do you ignore it, or are you working to achieve it? Think about that. Just take a deep breath. Or do you think that you're not capable of achieving your dreams, your desires? So let me quote Emerson to you, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "Get thy blowiest nothingness out of the way and allow the divine circuit to work." So what does that mean? You know, no idea ever comes without the total mechanics for the complete manifestation of the idea. But in the same way that if you turn on the radio station and you don't get the dial clearly on the station, what happens? What happens? They're static. And so the same thing happens in terms of us being available to that infinite intelligence that is everywhere. It is infinite, it is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive.
There is nothing outside of omnipresence, so it is everywhere present in and through and around all things. There is nothing more powerful than omnipotence. The universe is not just some power. It is all the power there is. And when we take a step towards our true essence, everything in the universe rushes to assist us in fulfilling that purpose. And some of us look at others and think that they've been lucky with the demonstrations that are happening in their life. But the word luck itself, for water here, be right back. Thank you. The word luck is an acronym that you can use, living under correct knowledge. L-U-C-K, living under correct knowledge. When we are living under correct knowledge, the law works whether we know it or not. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So, you know, our thoughts are our seeds, and when these seeds are sown into fertile soil, then there is, and the soil is cultivated, meaning you put your attention repeatedly on that, which is what we often do with the things that we do not desire to have unfolding in our lives. We just keep repeating it over and over and over. I know a woman right here, not too far from me, and this woman is into the eighth decade of her life. But as a young woman, as a young girl and young woman, she picked cotton. And it was a tremendous stress and strain, I would imagine. I don't know. I've never picked cotton. But what I know is that she's reliving the cotton field in these days. And there are some issues that are in her tissues. And that's not what this is about. This is about us understanding when we have issues in our tissues, we can look at our perception and see it's now not a theory anymore. It's been documented by the neuroscientists that when we are traumatized mentally, emotionally, physically, or otherwise, there is a biochemical reaction that occurs in our bodies, and it influences, in fact, you know, we are so fabulously made, as it says in Psalm 139, where can I flee from thy spirit? If I should go climb the highest mountain, behold, thou art there. If I should go to the depths of the sea, behold, thou art there. If I should take to the morning and go to the uttermost parts of the sea, thou art there. There's simply just not a spot where God is not. And it goes on to say in Psalm 139, I knew you even in your mother's womb. And so the scientists are telling us nowadays that from the moment of conception, that we inherit certain tendencies, that they can even be brought in from the ancestral lineage. There are things that happen when we are in the birth, when we are still in the fetal stage, that when the mother is traumatized in some way or another, it affects the fetus. And lo and behold, when we take our first breath, we bring with us some baggage. And we get to work out these details, but this is all a part of that commitment that we made to fulfill the purpose that we have come to fulfill in this lifetime and could not do it any better anywhere else on the planet than with the mother that we have, with the father that we have. And so as we come to recognize how magnificently we are made, and if it's true for us, it's true for mothers and grandmothers and surrogate mothers and all the other mother figures that are around. But it is the day of Thanksgiving. It just happens to be Mother's Day. And so we can look at it as a day of Thanksgiving for our mothers. But every Mother's Day, I honor my mother with a couple of poems. The one is the one that I just read, Me and Mama. The other one I wrote the same day, and this has been 20-some years ago. But I had the desire at one time to acknowledge my mother in spirit. And so this poem is called, Mama, I Learned a Lot from You. get to is about subliminal learning. You know, I learned many wonderful things. My mother was an extraordinary manager of money. She just didn't have a lot of money. But then that's what made it extraordinary, because she was able to acquire things for us. Although it was nine of us, there were not nine at the same time. There were as many as six at any given moment, most of the time. I was with the oldest to the youngest, being the fifth child from the top of the bottom. So my mother knew how to manage very well, and we were never hungry. We were never without. And just by virtue of the fact that I was a female, and there were only three females, one 8 years older than I, the middle one, and one 11 years younger. So we never had to wear hand-me-downs, but my brothers had a different experience because there were six of them. And so they sometimes, their things got passed on to the other one. We never really talked about it, so I don't know how they felt about it. But I know what my experience was. My things were due, and my mother managed to do this by putting things in the layaway seasonally every year, every single year growing up. There was the subsequent season, the clothing was in the layaway. And there were many other things that my mother was able to do that that required money. And they didn't have all the programs, the social programs that exist nowadays. So I learned some of those things. But those things are not the things that get in the way, generally. Although I have to add a caveat at this point. Because in my evolutionary process, I didn't discover for many decades, and if you've had this experience, I'd like you to call back next week and we can talk about it and explore it. I knew that I was accomplishing things that my parents had not, academically and in a few other ways, travel, etc. But I didn't realize that I could see that there were things not happening, but I didn't attribute it to hidden beliefs, and we all have some. And so the hidden belief that I discovered that I had many decades down the road was my mother's belief of not enough, not enough. And so we pick up these things, whether they want us to or not, and, of course, what mother wants the child to pick up an attitude or a characteristic that didn't serve them, and if it didn't serve them, it probably is not going to serve us, and it will not serve our children as we pass it on subliminally. And so this particular poem that I read every Mother's Day, the next one is called Mama, I Learned a Lot from You.
Mama, I learned a lot from you. Even more than you want me to. Not only did I learn courage to raise my babies on my own, through you I learned to resist love, then reap back what I sown. I know that Daddy made mistakes like each and every one of us, but tolerance was not your virtue, and so I learned intolerance too. Mama, I learned a lot from you. Even more than you'd want me to. Financial acumen you demonstrated time after time. Money didn't come easy for you as a mother of time. Laying away clothing season after season. Us kids had to look nice. That was your only reason. I learned a lot from you. Even more than you'd want me to. So I learned to handle money, whether it was long or short, financing the care of my three children. Stretching dimes became my art. Mama, I learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. So you decided to divorce Daddy and show me what to do. Later, I divorced my husband and took the children too. Mama, I learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. I watched you resist love, so independent you'd rather be alone, especially with the children whom you call your very own. No thought for yourself, Mama, and the day the kids to be gone. Mama, I learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. I watched as love came to your door each time you turned it away. I'm busy with my kids right now. Come back again another day. Mama, I learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. Many times I peeked out when love came to my door. The chimes ring out softly as though they were keeping the score. But I had learned from you, Mama, so I wouldn't let love in. I can raise these kids all by myself. Let love come back again. 30 years now, Mama, that was at that time. And my children are all grown. When is love coming back? It's no fun being alone. Mama, I learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. I really, really appreciate all that I've done. However, I think I'll break tradition. I've opened up my heart. True love is now my mission. Mama, learned a lot from you, even more than you'd want me to. Mama, I salute you in your current expression. I salute you and all mothers, all the mothers to be, all those who are in this moment, in the process of becoming mothers or giving birth to females who will eventually become mothers. It's, as Oprah Winfrey says, the toughest job on the planet is being a mother. Now, Oprah is not speaking from being a biological mother, but don't let that make you think that she is not mothering people. She, Oprah Winfrey, in addition, as you probably already know, has this academy in South Africa where she has put many girls through this academy there. She has founded it from A to Z. And people who would never probably have gotten such an opportunity, not in the large numbers that exist there in this academy, where Oprah has chosen to mother these young ladies through this process. I salute Oprah Winfrey for that. And also, I've seen on her show on a couple of occasions, one where there were 300 African-American men that had been put through universities like Morehouse. They had become doctors and lawyers through the kindness, courtesy, and generosity of Oprah Winfrey. And, of course, she has placed electronic equipment, computers, and other things. And, of course, she has lots of money. But there are many people with lots of money. That does not make them motherly. And what we're doing today is saluting those people who have some level of commitment from the heart to act like a mother, in addition to as well as those biological mothers, as well as those surrogate mothers, as well as even den mothers. I remember years ago, I wasn't a den mother, but I was for the cheerleaders. And what it turned out to be was a mother for 7 other people, young adults, because they became like little children. And I've noticed that not just with the cheerleaders that I coached, but I also have a function in several other capacities where there were adults older than these teens. And what I noticed is what I have observed, when often adults are not in a position of responsibility, they feel free to act like little children. Have you seen that? Have you been one of those people? If so, stop it. Stop it. It makes it difficult and challenging for all of the people that are there. I want to also salute Michelle Obama, the First Lady, because of her decision on how her children would be raised as the first family. They could easily be treated like little princesses, and I'm sure there are some ways in which that is true. But she has made it, Michelle has, very clear from the very beginning that her children would have chores in the White House. They have to make up their own beds.
their own death. There are certain other things, functions that they have to do. She's preparing them for a lifetime, not just the life that they're having as the first family, the children there, but the life that they will be having as they mature and evolve and grow and go out into the world. There's another mother that I want to salute. This is the woman is the mother of now a deceased child, Ben Underwood. Ben Underwood is a child that was born in Sacramento, California, and early on they discovered that there was a problem with his eyes, and after a series of tests, examinations, etc., they diagnosed Ben with cancer in both eyes. And the option that was given to his mom, who was a single parent, I believe, at that time, was to either allow his eyes to remain in that infected condition, or of course, probably would conclude with his death at a not too distant time from then, and he was not yet three, or they could remove both of his eyes, which obviously would leave him blind. And so this young mother, what a horrific decision to have to make. But she made it based on faith that she would be led in the exact way that she needed to raise a child without eyes. She did not refer to him as blind. And so I've listened to her story many times because I admire the decision and the way she carried it out. When Ben awakened from the surgery and discovered that he could not see at 2 years of age, when he called out to his mommy exclaiming that he couldn't see, his mother's decision that her child would not be raised as a handicap, so she says that she took Ben's hand, this little two-year-old, and she says to him, "But you can see in a different way now." And she put his tiny hand to her face, and she said to him, the two-year-old, "See, you can feel mommy's face. You can feel with your hand. You can see with your hands." And she began to put Ben's tiny hand on her lips so that he could feel what it was like when she spoke. And she just placed his hands in different parts, and she began to tell him that he would be able to live life fully. Now, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but you get the picture, and that's what I want you to get, because then from the moment of his coming out of surgery, he was encouraged and inspired and supported by his mother in living a healthy lifestyle. So as this process unfolded, by the time Ben became 4 years old, he was using what is considered to be echo sound. Ben had this capacity, this ability by then to walk down the street, and if he were near a fence, he could tell if the fence were made of wood or metal. This is called echo sound. Ben was able to ride his bicycle. Even there are pictures on YouTube of Ben. He's been on Oprah and Ellen DeGeneres and various other shows and various other television news programs. But Ben was even able to stand on his bike. That's something sighted people can't do necessarily, to stand up on the bike, bending over with his hands on the handlebars and ride this bicycle outside, this child without eyes. He was able to play basketball and hit the ball. He could tell from the sound, and I wish I understood it, but I think you'd have to be probably like Ben to understand it. There are only a few people in the world, in the whole world, that are, of course, blind, without eyes, or people who have lost their sight. Some were born that way and some were not. But there's just a very, very few of all the billions of people on the planet, people that are able to do what Ben did. Ben could tell whether a vehicle was a truck or a car by the sound.
he could tell the fire hydrant when he got near it. They were just then could move quickly up and down the stairs. He did not use a cane, and he did not use a seeing eye dog. He eventually had prostheses where his mom had them made for his eyes, and when they were put into his eye sockets, you couldn't tell that Ben did not have eyes. And when he started in high school, the children did not know, even though they were seeing Ben, that Ben did not have eyes. That's how effectively he was able to move around. So some of the kids that he played with did not know for many years as well that Ben had no eyes. What a phenomenal woman, the mother of Ben Wood, that she should make such a decision and that she should be able to live out this decision. Fortunately, Ben, I probably shouldn't say unfortunate because I don't know that it was, but what I know is Ben lived much longer than what was expected because he was not anticipated, according to the prognosis, that he would even reach school age. But Ben lived to be nearly an adult. I think he was around 17 when I read that Ben had made his transition, that he had passed away. He was somewhere in the area of 17 or 18, but by then he had gained world fame and had taught some others who did not have eyes to use echo sound, but no one had taught Ben. Ben was self. Everything can be attributed to this mother's desire, her ambition, her determination, her dedication, her devotion, her attitude. All of these things are the kind of characteristics that will see us through. And many of us have mothers that have the same kind of qualities. And thank God, generally they're never called upon that they have to be manifested in that way as did the mother of Ben Underwood. And so even as a mother yourself, have you had experiences where you felt not appreciated by your children? Come on. You can own up to this because if you are normal, then you probably have had those experiences where you didn't fully appreciate, you didn't fully understand your mother. And now, of course, you have had children, and there are those times when they don't completely understand you, nor, for that matter, do they completely understand themselves. This is a process called life. And life is forever unfolding and expanding. And so I'm even getting now, as I started out this whole segment earlier, discovering things in this decade of my life that had to do with my life as a child at home with my parents in general and with my mother in particular. Things that if I had had some greater insight, I probably would not have had as many frustrating moments as I perceived myself to have had as a little child. What conclusions have you reached? And do you still have a mom around? You might, after this call, want to call her up and say, Mom, I really, really love you. I really, really appreciate you. Every part of you, I love and appreciate you. Thank you so much for being who you are, for being the university in which I became enrolled and have spent all of these years taking all the courses you've given me. I hope that I have acquired all of the knowledge that is necessary to fully appreciate you and who you are and whose you are. Thank you for being all of that and more. Thank you, Mama. And so I so wish that I had an opportunity for you to push number one and express your gratitude to your mom
on Blog Talk Radio, but that's okay. We can do that at another time. So for today, we're just going to, I'm going to invite you to go into the silence. So, you know, we've been talking about mothers, and there's a process that occurs during the birthing process. There's something, you know, they say that when little children laugh, or little children laugh 400 times a day, they laugh a lot. But what's happening when they laugh is that the hypothalamus is releasing hormones into the bloodstream, happy hormones, you could say. And so then what do you think is happening when we allow ourselves to be upset or frustrated? Well, the opposite. There's poison being released into the bloodstream. But you can actively release the hormone, the same one that is released during the birthing process. It's called oxytocin. And oxytocin is the female prosperity hormone, like adrenaline is for the men. But you can activate that. Have you noticed that maybe with yourself or with other women that often the creative period or phase of life does not include childbearing years? And so that's because now attention can be given fully to that, and it's the same energy, because every single thing is energy. If you saw The Secret some years ago where they talked about energy, that science referred to energy as the ministers do, or the holy men refer to God as everything. Energy is everything, or everything is energy. And the theologists say everything is God. God is all there is. So if energy is all there is, and energy never dies, but it can be transformed. And so by breathing in and then just releasing the breath, and by doing that several times, you can actually activate the release of the oxytocin into the bloodstream, which then strengthens your immune system. It's the opposite effect of when we get stressed, because when we get stressed, something happens. There's a communication that goes on in the body that says, it's not safe in here. You better get out. And so the blood is redirected from the heart to the limbs, the arms and hands and fingers, and as well their legs and feet, because you have to either run or fight. It's called a fight or flight syndrome. That was necessary during the days of the saber-toothed tiger, but the saber-toothed tiger has a different look nowadays. It could look like your boss on the job. It may look like your spouse. It may look like your mom. If you perceive it to be that way, it could look like anything that causes you stress. But you are the captain of your soul. You can, by choice, as Myrtle Freemore, the co-founder of Unity, said in her healing process, having been diagnosed with a condition that, medically speaking, the prognosis was that she would not be around in 6 months, but contrary to that prognosis, the diagnosis and the diagnosis was correct. The prognosis was off by 40 years. But it's because she began to change her perception of herself. She said that as she looked around and observed the life around her, the life of animals, as she observed the plants, as she began to look around, she realized, finally, she concluded that the only difference in the animals and the human beings was that there's an intelligence that the humans have that they can direct that energy, unlike the animals. And so through this process of breathing, so we're going to be signing off in a few minutes, and so I'd like to invite you to take this last minute and just breathe in and know that when this program is finished, that you're going to be experiencing a level of relaxation that was not likely to have been occurring prior to then. So just breathe in. Breathe in again. Let your tummy expand. And exhale. And one last time. Slowly, slowly breathe in. And exhale. Letting go. And letting the universe do what it does. The thing that you cannot do for yourself. And remember this week to get your bloated nothingness out of the way and allow the divine circuits to work. Call your mom. If your mom is already in spirit, just take a moment of quiet and salute your mom in whatever expression she is in at this moment. And salute yourself as a mom. Call in. Push number 1-646-200-4169. Have a great and grand and glorious day. I'll listen for you next week.